Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a Football Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course streaming live on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in. That's 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, X, at Zach Gelb. That is Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. I got Stuart Kovacs. I got Moist Mike. And we are rocking and rolling, jamming out with you all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time. Coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time, 1:20 p.m. Pacific time today, Andrew Perloff's picks. Yeah, that's right. Andrew Perloff's going to join us with some NFL picks. It was a great week on the show last week. I was 3-0. Trista Crick was 3-0. So in all likelihood, Perloff and I will probably combine to be 0-6 this week. That's just usually how the odds do end up playing on out. I'm not in a good mood today to start the show, by the way. We will get to the Cowboys in just a bit, as the Cowboys are mid. But the reason why I'm not in a good mood is Brandon Aubrey, you stink. I know you're a good kicker. I know right now you're perceived to be, with Tucker kind of falling off a little bit, you're perceived to be the best kicker in the NFL. First off, I did not think that the Dallas Cowboys should have kicked the field goal in that spot. Where the time was and the game being a five-point game, I thought if you missed the kick, you give the Giants good field position. So he should have, Mike McCarthy, taken a delay of game. You run an extra second off the clock. And then you just punt the ball and you pin it inside the 5 or 10-yard line. And the Giants have to go 90 yards in what? Like 30 seconds or whatever it was. But when he lines up to kick, it was everything that you wanted in an Al Michaels Amazon Prime broadcast. Because of the fact, you get, this kick's very important to some. And it was very important to me because Vegas had the number Cowboys -5.5. And it was a 5-point game. And lo and behold, the kick is up and it is no good wide. So thanks, but no thanks, Dallas. If I was going to lose that bet, I'll be the first one to say it. If I was going to lose that bet, which I ended up doing so, I wanted the Giants then to win. But I lost the bet. And the Cowboys won the game, but they didn't cover the spread. So more on the Cowboys in just a bit. But let's start the show off with the biggest game of the college football season so far. And I know it is an early, early, early college football season. We're only still in September. But we have Georgia against Alabama. And of course, that game will be played in Tuscaloosa. And this is a huge, 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 huge moment for not only Kalen DeBoer, but also Kirby Smart. And I vacillated on this game. Earlier in the week, love Bama. Now as we sit on a Friday, kind of like Georgia in this contest. But I've also changed my opinion on this. I thought heading into the week, there was more pressure on Alabama and Kalen DeBoer. Because this is a moment for Kalen DeBoer to tell people, hey, I'm a great coach. Even though you don't need this moment to say I'm a great coach, with what he's done, if you follow his career at Sioux Falls, if you followed his career at Fresno State, and he was also in the national championship game last year at Washington. But now you're in the SEC, it's different territory, now you're at the creme de la creme job, and you're replacing the greatest college football coach of all time in Nick Saban. So I thought there was more pressure on Kalen DeBoer to tell everyone, hey, not only is Alabama still here, we still run this bleep. But as the week has gone on, I have done a 180 on that, where I actually do believe there is more pressure on Kirby Smart, and I'll get to those reasons in just a bit. But I have to replay something that happened on this show yesterday, where at first I was like, this kind of sounds absurd, and maybe the more and more I think about it, I wouldn't go to the measures that this guy did. But there's recent history that shows us I may be caught up in a moment and I may be disrespectful to a long dynastic run of Alabama. And if you listen to this show, I'm not someone that hates Alabama. I love Nick Saban. I love the Alabama Crimson Tide. And also, I am a huge fan of Kalen DeBoer. And this goes back to when most of you didn't even know who Kalen DeBoer was, when he would come on this show and he joined us when he was the coach of Fresno State, for crying out loud. And any time, or almost any time, we've asked him to come on since then, at Fresno, Washington, even at Alabama, he has come on like 9.9 times out of 10. I was actually just talking to him off the air yesterday. So I'm not going to hide the fact that it's not like I'm going to be sitting on my couch freaking out if Alabama loses the game, but I would prefer Alabama to beat Georgia. And I don't dislike Georgia. You know, the Kirby Smart story has been ridiculous. What Stetson Bennett did there, winning two national championships, is awesome. Brock Bowers was the best tight end in the country. Now he's been a stud for Stu's Raiders in his early NFL career. So this has been a fun Georgia story because it means that it's not just Alabama every year. But let's listen back up to Damian Harris, who was on with us yesterday, the two-time national championship winning running back at Alabama. And he said, Georgia, even though you won two of the last three national championships, well, you're still the little brother to Alabama.
They're still the little brother to Alabama. Don't get me wrong. They're still the little brother, and Kirby knows that. So it's personal. This is going to be personal for both teams.
I think a lot of people believe that Georgia's moved past Alabama. You still said Georgia's little brother. Explain that a little bit.
What did you just say? Two out of the past 3 years. I mean, granted, this is a business of what have you done for me now? So I definitely understand that. Production-based business, what is your most recent success? I get that. Now, of course, hats off to Kirby. Much respect. They have won the national championship two of the last 3 years. They have built a very, very successful, dominant program. But they are not Alabama. They are not Alabama. It's not. It's plain and simple. They just are not Alabama. They do not have the pedigree that we have. They do not have the consistent level of success. So let's look at this from a totality perspective.
Gotcha.
Alabama's consistently 9-10 wins, 6 national championships, 12 years, 2 national championships, and 3 years. I mean, Georgia's making some progress, but again, they're not Alabama.
Okay, I have many thoughts on that, and I have changed my opinion a bit from when I heard it yesterday then to today. But Stu, let me ask you this, because in the moment when I first heard that comment yesterday by Damian Harris, I'm like, huh, it does kind of feel though, even though Bama beat Georgia last year in the SEC championship, with how the last 3 years have gone down, that Georgia is perceived to be right now the better program than Alabama. So calling Georgia the little brother, I thought was a little bit disrespectful at first by Damian Harris. And I'm not going to say I was surprised or startled that he said it. The guy went to Alabama and, right, look at all the championships Alabama has done. But I'm curious, Stu, your thoughts when you initially heard that yesterday when Damian Harris said it so emphatically on this show. Hey, Georgia, nice little run. We're still Alabama and you're still our little brother.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I think he's right.
Same.
Because, again, you could do something for a couple years. There's been a lot of programs the past 20 years that have had nice, quick runs. Alabama had a sustained run for like 15 years under
Saban. Still going, you could say.
And it's still going. Right. It's
new
it's,
territory.
Yeah. So I just think if Georgia wants to be on that level, I know they won two straight championships. They've been a great program for a while, but they have to do a lot more to be considered the preeminent college football program, and that's what Alabama is.
And here's the other thing, too. You bring up a great point, and this is where I was going as well. We've seen other programs, right, be the flavor of the month, or in this case, more than a few months here. Look at Clemson. We said the same thing, right? Clemson had success up against Alabama, right? Clemson won two national championships. Up Dabo Sweeney and Clemson, they have usurped Nick Saban and Alabama. How do we talk about Clemson now? Oh, their apex is just winning the ACC. They're not viewed as a national championship contender. And even though, right, the Clemson student, the Clemson alum, the former Clemson player, and I had this conversation with Isaiah Simmons a few years ago, And I said, your program is good, not great. And he goes, how can you say that? And I go, because the standard at Clemson, what Dabo built, was to win championships. You guys haven't been a championship contender in a while, and don't just give me this bull junk about just winning the ACC. There's a difference in winning your conference championship and then winning a national championship. And Clemson has been far removed from really being in the national championship contending conversation. Now, I do think Georgia is set up better long-term than Clemson is to continue this run. But until we sit here and see them win another championship or maybe two more, I'm not going to automatically say, hey, Georgia has overtaken Alabama in this world. Because look at this. Two things. One, if that was the case, that Georgia is now the top dog, you don't lose last year when you're going for a three-peat to an Alabama team that earlier in the season looked like they had no business being in the SEC championship game. And they lost that last year. And this is why I've actually done a 180 throughout the week in thinking that there's more pressure on Kirby Smart than Kalen DeBoer, because Alabama could play a game on Saturday, and I know there are fans that may not want to hear this, where they lose the game, but let's say they lose by a field goal 34-31, and you know what some people will be saying? Maybe not Roll Tide Willie, but you know what, like, I would be saying? Hey, that's a heck of a showing. First time Alabama, Georgia, you're going up against a team that is now perceived to be the standard, and Kalen DeBoer, a few games into his career at Alabama, look, he only lost by a field goal in a game that he could easily win. Like, if there's a moral victory, and I know neither of these fan bases want to hear it, but if there's a moral victory to be had on Saturday night, there's a chance Alabama could lose the game but have a moral victory. If Georgia loses the game by a field goal, you know what the take is? Man, Kirby Smart, you had things going at Georgia. You could still get revenge later in the year, but you just lost to Nick Saban in his last year when he didn't have a great team. And then Kalen DeBoer rolls in, and it's a few games into his career at Alabama and in the SEC, and he doesn't even have things humming yet, and he beats your team, which is the team that a lot of people before the year started were picking to win the national championship. That's why there's more pressure on Georgia. Because Georgia and Alabama right now, I don't even think it's big brother, little brother, because I do think that's disrespectful to what Georgia has done. This is like the stage where a mom has two sons, and both sons are like unbelievable students. They're unbelievable athletes. They're both going to Ivy League schools. And then one of the child, you know, will ask, one of the children will ask, hey, mom, who do you like more? Do you like, oh, let me think of two random names. Johnny or Lucas? Which, you know, mom, which one is the favorite child? And that's where we're at right now. Alabama and Georgia. Yes, one is older and one is younger. I get that. But they have both accomplished so much. And now you have the dreaded question that every parent tries to avoid, and that, who is your favorite child? And this matchup on Saturday night is going to tell us who's the favorite child. Both have great resumes, but we'll see who's going to really take that baton and run with it this weekend. And I really do believe there is more to lose in this one for Georgia than there is for Alabama. And just look inside the matchup. And Greg McElroy said this earlier in the week with us. Like, Carson Beck is perceived to be the top quarterback in this draft. His team just struggled 2 weeks ago against Kentucky. Jalen Milroe, people weren't fully bought in on him before this year started. I was. I said it probably 5,000 times this summer that Jalen Milroe was going to benefit the most by getting coached by Kalen DeBoer rather than Nick Saban. Now everyone says it. I just pay attention. Some people don't pay attention. So there is a lot more to gain here for Alabama in this one, because it's weird. We're at a spot where I'm not saying Alabama is disrespected, but they're not viewed as that immovable force as they once were because Saban's no longer there. But I don't think they're that far off from getting back to that. For Georgia, you're now the team with the shield, and you got to fight off Alabama. And if you lose, that's now back-to-back times where if you lost to Alabama, once with Saban, once with the new guy DeBoer, and there's a lot more on the line in this one for the Georgia players and also for Kirby Smart. And I can tell you this too, longevity of the Georgia program, I know we saw Urban Meyer at Florida and there were a lot of off-the-field problems, but now there's been a lot of off-the-field problems at Georgia. And that has been well-documented too. And really with Saban, when his players were there, there weren't that many times that we were spent talking about, I'm sure there's issues that happened, but there weren't an entire offseason where we basically spent talking about off-the-field issues. Because I'm not going to say that could derail a program, but it could prevent having a player or two that makes it easier for you to win another national championship. So who's there more pressure on this weekend? Is it Georgia or Alabama? I do think it's for more pressure is on Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. It is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a timeout when we come on back. The kids these days, they say, you know, so-and-so is just mid. Well, the Cowboys, they're just mid. I'll tell you why when we return. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. The Cowboys win last night, if you want to even say that. That was not a great performance. I don't walk away inspired about this Cowboys team. They are 2-2, though, but that's kind of what the Cowboys are. They just are a mid-team where I don't think they're going to be bad, but I don't think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be flirting right around 8-9 or 9-8. And I said this for the entirety of the offseason. I thought there was too much drama with this team. I didn't think this team got better. And I don't think this team is going to make the playoffs this season. Now, we'll get more into the game from last night in just a bit. But from that game, there is news in the aftermath of it. And this kind of stinks. It always stinks when a player gets hurt. But it really stinks right before you get a big, sexy matchup. And coming up on Sunday Night Football next week, it's the Steelers and it's the Cowboys. And it's a storyline that is really created from this show, quite frankly. Where, sure, obviously T.J. Watt and Micah Parsons get all the credit. But we did an interview with Micah Parsons at the Super Bowl that went viral. Like millions and millions and millions of views on social media. And it was Micah Parsons basically crapping on T.J. Watt, which was ridiculous. And I was like speechless during the interview because I couldn't believe what was happening. And he said that T.J. Watt is not a top five pure pass rusher in the NFL. Like, it's one thing if you're Micah Parsons, right? Even though I've said for a while that T.J. Watt's the best defensive player in football. But it's one thing if you're Micah Parsons that you have a seat at the table if you say, okay, I'm better than T.J. Watt. Like, I could at least respect that. If you're in the conversation, it's belief in yourself. But then to just be so blatantly disrespectful and say that he's not a top five pass rusher in the NFL, and never named the fifth guy. He only named four, and then he stopped, and then he went on a rant. That is something that I thought was very disrespectful and even said in the moment to Micah Parsons, I've done this now long enough. Micah, I know how this is going to be perceived, where this is going to be perceived as you hate T.J. Watt. Is that true? And he denied that. So, I had this vision, Stu, of Sunday Night Football. Bum, bum, bada, bum, bum, bada, 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 bum. And on Sunday Night Football, I had this vision, as we've seen on Amazon Prime, we've seen on Sunday Night as well for Sunday Night Football on either the Thursday nights or Sunday night games, that they tend to use a lot of radio clips. And I really thought if there was a chance for us to be featured in one of those. Like last night, it was RJ Choppy from The Fan in Dallas. He was the radio host that they featured. I've seen Greg Giannotti when there's been a New York team. I know the Giants won last night, but I think it was more so with the Jets. He's been featured. I really thought there's a chance, myself at the Super Bowl, sitting next to Micah Parsons, when Micah Parsons says, yeah, T.J. Watt's on a top five pure pass rusher in the league, and then you get Mike Tirico and the Chris Collinsworth, they don't do the slide anymore, but you get the point. I still wish they do the slide, and that was in my vision. And that's how I thought next Sunday night was going to open up. But Ian Rappaport comes out today. You saw Michael Parsons get hurt in the game last night, and it was towards the end of the game. So quite frankly, I don't know if he needed the cart or if they were just like, hey, let's quickly just get you back to the locker room, especially because of who it is. But he took his shoe off, and he was getting carted off into the locker room, so it was an ominous feeling. And it's not the end of the world, but the news that we have on Micah Parsons is that All-Pro Micah Parsons, according to Ian Rappaport, did in fact suffer a high ankle sprain in last night's win over the Giants. His status is to be determined. So, two things off that. He could still play in the game. I saw him leaving the stadium last night. It kind of looked like one of his ankles were just like chopped off, or one of his feet were chopped off, because he was clearly favoring one side and it was painful to walk. And you could also, you know, people aren't going to love this, but it happens. You get a good little shot before the game and then you end up playing. So I don't know if he's going to be able to go in this one. I would probably say that it's unlikely. But there has to be some personal pride here, Stu, on Micah Parsons, where you know he's going to try his best to get on the field. Because even though Micah Parsons isn't pass rushing up against T.J. Watt, that matchup Steelers and Cowboys is billed as T.J. Watt up against Micah Parsons. And that battle and how irate Micah was on our show talking about T.J. Watt, it seems like there's a little extra incentive for Micah Parsons, where if, let's say, next week they were playing, I don't know, let me just throw the Vikings. Like, does he feel like he has to rush back to play? But the fact they're going up against the Steelers, even though it's NFC, AFC, it seems like for Micah, this one means a little bit more something, especially when T.J. Watt is off to this incredible start to the season, and Micah, outside of game one up against the Cleveland Browns, hasn't really gotten a lot of praise because he's been kind of getting shut down this year. So I wonder mentally for Micah Parsons, does whatever animosity that he clearly has displayed before for T.J. Watt, does that kind of at least force him to get out on the field and see if he could go and at least give it a try before just saying, hey, I'm going to be inactive this week, when most people would be inactive after just suffering a high ankle sprain on this Thursday and then 10 days later getting out on the field on Sunday?
Yeah, like you said, it's a statement game, primetime game, two of the most, I say, famous teams, right? The Steelers and the Cowboys with biggest fan bases. Maybe not one and two, but definitely two of the top five.
Packers fans on line one.
Packers are on there for sure. It's funny, Max Crosby has basically a similar injury, high ankle sprain.
He's not playing this weekend.
He's not. He tried to play last week. He did basically nothing against the Panthers, and now he is out. So I'm wondering, obviously, two different guys, who knew if the injuries are the same, but it is, they're both high ankle sprains and he's out, so I don't know.
Cowboys fans aren't going to like that I'm going to say this.
Uh-oh.
This is Micah Parsons' Super Bowl next week. It is. Like, I don't think that's crazy to say. If Micah Parsons sits down next to us and I say, hey, Micah, do you think you could go to the Super Bowl this year and win the Super Bowl? Of course he's going to say yes. But if we injected him with truth serum and he said yes, it would be a lie. This Cowboys team, they're so vanilla. They're boring. They're not good. But they're not bad. They're just mid. That's what the drama Dallas choking Cowboys are this year. I can't even probably call them the drama Dallas choking Cowboys this year, because we know they always provide drama, but that at least implies that they're really good. And then when people start to buy in, they choke in the games and they don't get the job done. But I don't think they're going to be playing in a big game this year. Like, I watched that team last night, Stu. You know, the Giants, as easily as they lost the game, they also easily could have won that game. The Cowboys, for me to give them praise today, they needed to blow out the Giants. The Giants aren't a good team. Like, I know Marco was sitting here yesterday trying to tell us how good Daniel Jones is, and you could see the stats on Daniel Jones, and if you didn't watch the game, you're like, oh, 29 of 40, 281 yards, an interception. But, like, you know, those are fine numbers. But when you watch the game, he missed about two or three touchdown passes, and the Giants didn't score a touchdown in the game. So that's kind of Daniel Jones. You know what Daniel Jones is? He's a quarter short of a dollar. That's what Daniel Jones is. Everyone tries to tell you that Daniel Jones is this or that, and he was okay last night. But if there was a top 15 quarterback on the field last night for the New York Giants, they win that game. Like, Dallas didn't overly impress. They didn't. And Dak played a fine game. The Cowboys really have no run game. CeeDee Lamb broke off a big touchdown. But outside of that touchdown, it wasn't like CeeDee Lamb is awesome. And the Cowboys defense, it was like Ben don't break last night. So I understand the Cowboys are 2-2, and you'd rather be 2-2 than 1-3. But their next three games are against the Steelers, the Lions, and the 49ers. If they win one game, I'd be impressed by the Cowboys. Like, the Steelers one could go either way. But the Lions should beat the Cowboys. The 49ers, even with their injuries, should beat the Cowboys. And after that, the schedule doesn't get that much easier. Their next three after that, at Atlanta, who beat Philadelphia and just played the Chiefs really close. Then they play Philadelphia and then the Texans. So this is a Cowboys team. I don't think they're going anywhere this year. And they are not going to make the playoffs this year. And you look around, the Eagles should win this division. If Nick Sirianni doesn't win this division, he shouldn't even if they made the playoffs as a wild card team, shouldn't be allowed to coach. Should not be allowed to coach in the wild card round. The Eagles are going to win this division. The NFC North, right now, Lions are better than the Cowboys. Packers are better than the Cowboys. And I think the Vikings are better than the Cowboys. Someone's going to win the NFC South. And then the NFC West, you know, I know the Rams are 1-2 and the Niners are 1-2. I still think those teams are better than the Cowboys. And the Seahawks, they're out to a 3-0 start, so we'll see what they do. I think the NFC, it has improved from where it's been in previous years. So a few years ago, you could go 9-8 and make the playoffs. You may have to get 10 wins in the NFC to make the postseason this year. And can I see the Cowboys getting 10 wins this year? I can't. I think the most they get is 9. Like, they are 2-2 right now. Let's say they don't have Micah Parsons next week. I'll take the Steelers in that one. Then I'll have them lose to the Lions, lose to the Niners. All right, I'll give them a win up against the Falcons. So that puts them at 3 wins through 9 weeks. I'll have them lose to Philly, lose to the Texans. I'll have them beat the Commanders, beat the Giants. So that's at 5 wins. Lose to the Bengals, beat the Carolina Panthers. So that's 6. You know, I kind of trust Tampa Bay more than them right now. They play Tampa after that. You know, can they split with Philly? I guess that's possible. 7, and they play the Commanders at the end of the year. I gave them a loss to the Commanders early, so I'll give them a win against the Commanders early, so I'll give them a loss to them this time around. 7 wins right there. That to me, this is 7-10 football team. And maybe I'm wrong on 1 or 2 of those. All right, 8, maybe 9 at most. But I feel pretty damn confident looking at this team that they did not get better this offseason. Their run game is non-existent. You know, they have a solid tight end option, but really their offense is just Dak to CeeDee Lamb. And their defense, I know we all praise the defense after beating Cleveland, but since then I haven't seen a great defensive team. Like last night, the broadcast was praising Mike Zimmer. For what? Daniel Jones, I know he missed some throws, but he looked competent in the game. And Mike Zimmer's getting praised now all of a sudden? That to me didn't match. So you only beat the Giants by 5 points and you could have lost the game. You know, if Wandell Robinson could catch the ball or Daniel Jones could locate Malik Nabers, I know left the game with a concussion on one of those plays, there's an extra touchdown for the Giants. And the Cowboys lose the game. So I don't walk away last night saying, wow, gee golly, Dallas is 2-2. They survived the blowout against the Saints and you know, they gave a nice effort in the fourth quarter up against the Ravens, even though they lost. Now they're 2-2, and they barely beat a bad Giant team. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break. When we come on back, whose team needs them more this weekend? Jordan Love to return for the Packers or Justin Herbert to lace it up for the Chargers? We'll get into that on the other side. Update time first. Here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Ask the Pros time. It's time to Ask the Pros, or you, the listener, get to ask us a question, and it's brought to you by Riley Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sports Net or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs and get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Hey, Stu, I got to ask you before we get into who is more important for their team this weekend to play, is it Jordan Love or is it Justin Herbert? Packers going up against the Vikings at legendary Lambeau Field. Packer 2-1, Vikings are 3-0 to start off the season, and the Los Angeles Chargers, who are 2-1 on the season, they just lost to the Steelers last week, 20-10. Herbert was banged up going into the game, banged up during the game, and they will have the Kansas City Chiefs going to Inglewood this weekend in SoFi Stadium, and we know the Chiefs haven't looked great, but they're still 3-0. But I always have this dilemma, and I feel like I ask this question anytime it happens. So after the show tonight, I have an engagement party that I need to go to for one of my good friends. And this engagement party is at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. This has nothing to do, Stu. You're laughing. This has nothing to do with, hey, I do need to watch the Mets tonight. But this isn't like, do I look like a loser if I'm watching the Mets game on my phone at this? That's not
okay,
where I'm going.
Okay, that's where I thought this was going.
I
thought
you
really wanted to watch his Vatek-Miami game or something.
Virginia Tech-Miami, yeah. I'm very interested in it tonight, by the way, as well. But no, that's not where this is at. I have already done that enough where I'm okay with any shame that comes with it. Like at one of my buddies' weddings a few weeks ago, I was screaming for Nebraska when they were going up against Colorado, drunk as a skunk, if I'm being honest with everybody. So I have got past that. But the engagement party, to me, I'm okay if someone wants to throw an engagement party. And this could sound a little cheap. I don't think this is me coming off as cheap. I think it's just me doing the right thing. And it's like, how many gifts do you need? What's your policy on gifts for an engagement party? Because if you're invited to the engagement party, that means you're invited to the wedding. And for me, I give the gift at the wedding. But I have some friends that give a gift at the engagement party and then give a gift for the wedding. It's like, I understand I make a nice living. I like my job. You know, people expect some things out of me. But for me to give you an engagement gift and then a wedding gift, then it's just like, okay, even though I love this couple, you know, I know both of them, great friends. For me to give you an engagement gift and then a wedding gift, I think is a little bit too much.
So I've only been to one engagement party, and I don't believe I gave a gift.
Okay.
But I gave, obviously, a gift at the wedding.
Yeah. Well,
so I don't know.
Well, let's be real. If you don't give a gift at a wedding, if you get invited to a wedding and you don't give a gift, scummy.
That's absurd, yeah.
And I know people.
Oh, boy.
I recently found out through one of my close friends that he had a beautiful wedding. And let me just say, there was two twins, and one of the twins has a girlfriend. So three people with associated, and none of the three gave a gift at the wedding. So if like one person forgets a gift, scummy, but when you have two sets of twins and then one also has a girlfriend, how no one like did checks and balances there, who's bringing the gift, to me is a bad look. So you have to give a gift at the wedding. And, you know, I'll give a nice gift. It's like a good friend. You know, the closer the friend, the nicer the gift. But the idea of me having to give an engagement gift, maybe this may sound, I don't want this to come off sexist. I know someone will accuse me of sounding sexist. But like, I'm just going with my family and the way that we talk about this. Like, I've brought this up with my family before. My mom has been like, you didn't give an engagement gift? My sister's like, you didn't give an engagement gift? You're not giving an engagement? Like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, no, I'm not. And my dad kind of looked at me and he was like, I think you're in the right on that one. So I don't know if like, on the female side of things, they feel like if their friends get engaged, they have to give a gift. But at least in my household, or my family, that's how it was split. My dad and I were like, no, you don't have to give an engagement gift. But then my sister and my mom were like, you two are idiots. And usually the girls are more intelligent than the guys. So I'm not a bad dude by not bringing a gift to this party.
Don't they have bridal showers too?
Yeah.
So then there are three gifts involved if you're...
The registry. That's what
yeah.
I... Gotta look at the registry. I go, why? I go, they're getting married. I don't need to go buy them a blender or something like that. Or a new rug. Come on. What are we doing here? So I am I am redoing my apartment. So my best friend who's living with me for the last few years, he's moving out. And we've had a wall right in the apartment. So there's like a living room, a big living room, and there's a wall that is now another bedroom, and then a full one big master bedroom. So I am knocking down the wall next week. My buddy's moving out this weekend. And, you know, I'm just rearranging the apartment. I went today to Target to go get, because I wanted like a new bath mat in the tub. I wanted a mat outside the tub and then a mat in front of the toilet. And I said, you know what? While I'm there, let me get a new shower curtain as well. What do you think it cost for a shower curtain? A bath mat for inside the tub, so like when you're standing, you don't fall and slip. And then a rug outside of the tub and then right in front of the toilet.
Say $80.
I would have thought it would have been lower, right? That would have probably been my guess. $98 from Target.
Yeah.
Yeah. $98 at Target. Well, what did Samter say? No? No?
I don't know.
Oh. I heard
shopping
in the
wrong place is what he said.
I'm not shopping in the wrong place. I went to Target. Like, what, I got a different deal at Bed Bath & Beyond?
It says $20 on Amazon, yeah. He claims.
But here's the problem. I'm not anti-Amazon. I use Amazon a lot. You know, I got a brand new air fryer from Amazon. But when it comes to the way that something's going to look in your house, I am someone, or in your apartment, I'm someone that I don't like to do the whole buy and then possibly return online. It's just an inconvenient, obnoxious, old school process. Like, that's my old school mind of thinking. So for me, I said, okay, I wanted to get a little color coordinated. Want to spice things up a little bit. I said, let me just go see how this looks. But then if I ordered off Amazon and I got it and I didn't like it, then I got to go to the UPS store. I got to get a label. I got to do a return. It's just it's a massive pain in the ass. So if I got screwed out of like $20 there, I'm okay with that. But don't be expecting an engagement gift and you invite me to your engagement party. Because I got a new bathroom to put together and a new apartment to basically put together. And a big fat TV screen that I just hung on the wall as well. Stuff ain't cheap, even though if you sometimes get a deal here and there. Alrighty, for this weekend, who's more important to play? Both guys have been limited throughout the week. Jordan Love or Justin Herbert? Chargers are going up against the Chiefs, and the Green Bay Packers are going up against the Minnesota Vikings. I don't even think this one is close. Like, the Packers just won their last two games, and the Green Bay Packers have just won their last two games with Malik Willis. And Malik Willis, I don't think he's going to play this weekend. But Stu, it like seemed like Jordan Love was inching closer to return last week. And I thought it would have been malpractice for him to play last week. So I expect Jordan Love to play. On Herbert, I could see him missing the game. But I kind of feel like with the Harbaugh culture, they're going to try to grind this one out. And then if they get in the game up against the Chiefs and it gets out of hand, then they'll pull Justin Herbert and put, you know, whomever under center for the Los Angeles Chargers. But if the Chargers have to roll with their backup quarterback up against the Chiefs, they got no shot. They got absolutely no shot. If they're rolling, even if it's Easton Stick or Taylor Ham Heineke, pick whatever you want. If you have to start either one of those quarterbacks up against the Kansas City Chiefs with a Steve Spagnuolo defense that is very good, there's no chance that the Chargers can win the game. For the Packers, it's weird. They could play Malik Willis in this one. And even though Minnesota is 3-0, I think they could win Malik Willis with Malik Willis in this one. And I think it's more likely that Malik Willis would lead the Packers to a victory against the Vikings than it is Taylor Ham Heineke or Easton Stick leading a victory up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, I don't even think this one's close to. Who is it more important for his team to win this week? To play this week in order to win? It is easily Justin Herbert playing, even if he's at like 60, 70% compared to then Jordan Love having to go for the Packers up against the Vikings.
I think you said it best. They have no chance of beating the Chiefs with their backup. I just can't see it. I could see the Packers winning with Willis. I'm not saying definitely winning or more likely to win than the Vikings, but
you know what?
I can't see it.
I actually do believe Love is going to play. I think either way, though, it's a lock that Green Bay wins this week up against Minnesota. Because Minnesota is 3-0 right now, and their defense has been unbelievable with Brian Flores. Sam Darnold has been better than anyone could have imagined, even his own family members. Justin Jefferson, you know, I know he's dealing with some injuries, but he's always a stud. You got the return. That's the one thing that scares me of Aaron Jones, little revenge game. That's always scares me. But I just kind of feel like, Stu, that the Vikings being 4-0, that just sets off a little alarm in my head, like, oh, that can't happen. So I say it's a lock, and it probably isn't a lock in all likelihood, because the Vikings are a heck of a team. Like, I'm in the mind of thinking right now that the Vikings should be in the playoffs this year. But I don't know. I can't say on the radio the Vikings are going to win, because I just don't believe the Vikings are going to beat the Packers this weekend at Lambeau Field. I don't know. A 4-0 Minnesota Vikings team just seems funky to me. Seems funky.
It almost feels like a scheduled loss. Like, it can't possibly happen. I'm with you.
It's like me giving an engagement gift. It's unlikely. I'll just wait for the wedding, for crying out loud. Then I'll write the check and I'll be done with it. And also, you know what a pet peeve of mine is? How long do you give the couple until they deposit the check? How long? Once you give them the gift at the wedding.
I don't know if I've ever tracked that.
Well, I'm not saying you take the check back, but it's kind of obnoxious if they don't do so within like 2 weeks. After that, then you're just sitting and waiting to see when the money's going to go out of your account. I got a lot of problems today. Just better not to invite me to your weddings, folks. All right, coming up next, 10 college football questions. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network.